Welcome okay. to Cambridge Inside yeah, Out.
Finally, a little technical finally, a little difficulties. Late.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, today's July.
He's Robert Winters.
Oh, I'm Robert Winters.
And July 16th.
July 16th, 2019.
Right. Okay.
All right. So anyway, we're kind of now, I think, at the midway point.
In what?
Through the great grand month when new city council candidates or known city council candidates have to pull out their nomination papers and
2 weeks exactly, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they started doing it July 1st, and they will be required to get their nominating signatures in no later than July 31st. And meanwhile, the Election Commission has actually been doing
there's some that already have done it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, bunches of candidates have already turned in sufficient signatures. There's one little glitch. It was quite interesting. Oh. Actually required some intervention with the Cambridge Law Department.
Oh, dear. What was that?
So I was at the election. You know, what they do is when candidates file signatures, they the staff in the Election Commission's office do what they call provisional certification. So then they let the candidates know how many signatures they got, and you know, and then they proceed. So if they break their minimum 50, you know, the candidates don't have to go gather more if they don't choose to. And you can only turn in up to 100 signatures.
Right. But most people get more because you never know who's going to sign.
You definitely
want to
get more. Yeah. Exactly right. But here's the catch is that the state law requires that the forms that the people are signing have to be completely filled out. So all these fields for like what office are you running for, what's the date, etc., have to be filled out.
Oh, the candidate has to fill
it
out.
So there were two candidates who were provisionally getting signatures certified, but when it actually went to the Election Commission, one of the Election Commission pointed out that there was some missing information on the forms.
Okay.
And they said, well, we can't really officially certify these signatures yet until we get an opinion from the law department. So the law department did come back and they said, we can't count those signatures.
No, wait, I don't get it. Couldn't they just fill in the missing information?
No, because the thing is that, you know, even though it seems reasonable, but the thing is presumably when you, the candidate, are going up to a voter.
Oh,
and
it
you
should have shown all that.
Yeah, and you you know, and you didn't tell them what you were running for, and then they signed it.
Holy moly.
Yeah, so it's an oversight. You know, what actually happened, one candidate had turned it in, had everything right on the first page, but hadn't done it on the second page.
Wow.
Which is, you know, completely understandable.
That people like not going and turning on a
So that candidate got the signatures from the first page certified officially, but the other ones didn't count. Now they said, well, this could be a real problem if they used up, you're only allowed 3 sheets. What would happen if you turned in all 3 sheets and then they weren't counted? Would you not be allowed on the ballot? And the answer is you would not be allowed on the ballot. But the law department came back with their good grace and great wisdom.
Yeah.
And they said, however, even though there's a limitation of 3, if somebody screwed up a sheet, a technicality, they gave the Election Commission then the authority to issue a fresh sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And they could even go back to those same voters and have them re-sign.
Huh.
But the form would have to be filled out.
So they are now being allowed to use...
But so they have to do a redo.
Now, is that only one person that happened to?
It was actually two candidates. One candidate has now actually turned in the sheet number 3 and has gone over the 50 limits, so no need to go any further.
Yeah.
There's one other candidate who... notice how I'm deftly avoiding the names here.
Yeah, yeah, because, honestly, later off
but
the
it's
air.
it's an oversight, you know. I really can't...
I'm sure they said it oral, you know, it says the person I'm running for. It just wasn't
exactly
on the form.
Right. It wasn't on the form,
because nobody signed something and said, what are you running? I mean, they'd want to know.
So there was another candidate, you know, city council candidate, who had one little field missing, just a small thing missing. Mm. But in fact, the 40 signatures were not counted. And so now that candidate has to go back and do them fresh. But, you know,
at least they're allowing them another page to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that candidate probably doesn't need that extra page, but it's nice to know that it's there.
But what happens if then some of those people then sign somebody else's papers?
That's right, because
the
order
would
matter.
The later you turn it in, the more
that's
going to happen,
right? That's right.
Yeah.
Now, what could really be a problem, so I put a little note on a website, to sort of remind people.
Oh,
I said, make sure you fill out every field before you do it. And if there are any candidates watching, make sure you fill out every field, make no exceptions.
You know, it's really
And notarize every sheet.
Oh, you have to notarize
it? Yeah, and the doomsday scenario from my point of view is what happens if a candidate thinks they did everything right, they turn their papers in like on July 31st and go home and they say, well, I turned in 99 signatures and you forgot to fill in one of the forms. Right. Now it's too late.
Right. And so you're not on the ballot. You're giving them a 2-week warning, which is good.
Exactly. Right. So anyway, things have actually been getting pretty hot and heavy.
Now, we didn't meet last week, but right. there were tons of meetings that you went tons to some. Of meetings. I went to some.
Yeah.
Lots of things. So.
Actually, I want to say a few more things, one quick thing about the candidates here, only because, there was the big rush, the first flush when you get a lot of people pulling papers in July 1st, July 2nd, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. Then it kind of slowed down. I think it was one candidate who pulled papers on the 11th, for school committee. Mm-hmm. A repeat candidate, the Weinstein, right?
For school committee, right?
And then I think, okay, was anybody else going to pull papers? We were all waiting, I was specifically waiting for John Pitkin to pull papers, which he has not yet done, so he may not be a candidate, but...
Well, does he have financial pages? Isn't that also the first key to...
That's one of the things you can check for, but you don't have to necessarily file with the state prior to filing as a candidate.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and then the other question was whether Tim Toomey was going to pull papers or not, right?
But he did, didn't he?
Well, today he did.
Today?
Yeah. Oh. I was there when he was pulling papers. Now, one thing I need to emphasize is that, and this is not just specific to Councillor Toomey, is that there are currently 29 candidates who have pulled papers.
Oh my God, more than the Democrats.
Yeah,
candidates.
And the thing is not all of them will necessarily turn in signatures. So just because we have really 30 possible candidates right now, doesn't necessarily mean we're going to have 30 come the end of the month.
See.
Yeah. So there are some candidates who maybe it was just sort of a curiosity thing and they may
the two sisters?
Twins.
But they're going to run simultaneously?
Okay. There are some intriguing things happening in this election that I can't fully explain.
Are they in your candidates page?
Yes, they are. So here's what happened is that there are two candidates who ran, was it 4 years ago? I think it was 4 years ago, was Kim Courtney and
Javier
Dietrich.
Right? Yeah.
Okay, man and wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
They run a restaurant up in North Cambridge. They get into all sorts of controversy, right? Well, they actually pulled papers for five candidates.
Oh, well, can you do, what do you mean? They pulled them for other people?
Yeah, you can actually
do that.
Yeah. So actually, if we can show this here.
This is right here, right?
And see, let me just make sure if this, I don't know if this is not working here.
Wait, here.
Oh, okay. I say right. Okay, let's try it here.
Okay.
All right, so time, it was actually Kim Courtney, I believe, who came in and pulled papers for Courtney, Dietrich, Danila, Taylor, and Taylor. Right, I think you got to scroll down a little bit to see the bottom of the few of those there.
So
Emily and Abigail Taylor, who in fact have exactly the same address and the exact same birth year. So that's because they are in fact twins.
Unbelievable.
So, but
not that young either.
So I don't know what the game here is. Is this just done to kind of be disruptive or whatever? I'm not trying to disparage anyone here, but I can't view this as a sort of a serious collection of candidates here, but they seem to be putting together a slate. They actually wanted to pull papers, I think, for another one as well, and they may still come back with more candidates.
So maybe they want to see which one can get the most signatures?
I don't even think that's what it is.
Before you go back, who is John Roberts?
Okay, so, all right, so today,
it's just today.
In addition to Councillor Toomey showing up today, because you're looking here at just the challengers. Actually, if you go back, let's zoom out here a little second here.
Right.
There's actually something that says a list of all the candidates who pulled nomination papers.
Let's do that.
Right. So we'll go back to
Wait, it's not up here yet.
Right?
There it is.
Alrighty. Okay. This one here, this was in the order in which they actually pulled the papers. Council candidates first and then school committee candidates next. So if you scroll down toward the bottom of this table here, what you'll see is sort of the most recent activity after Courtney, Dietrich, Demo, and Taylor.
Okay.
Then Dennis Carlone came in, pulled papers.
Okay.
And then Ben Simon finally got around to doing it. And then Sabrina Wheeler, right? Javon Sabrina Wheeler. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that was a week or some, about a week ago. Yeah. And then today, Counselor Toomey was in pulled papers. And then this mm-hmm. fellow, John Roberts, who's listed in the street listing as a cook, he pulled papers, right? And actually, he was there. So actually, Counselor Toomey and I chatted.
I think they're being inspired by the Democratic candidates running. I think most people might as well throw in my hat.
Lots and lots of them. Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. Actually, if you scroll down there. Instead to where the school committee candidates are.
Oh, right. We shouldn't neglect them.
So we actually have nine.
More people have joined?
No. I think this is pretty much the same as it's been. Christopher Lim is new.
No.
Relatively new.
Yeah, okay. Dawson? I don't know that name.
Right. So Manika Bowman and then Alechi Kadete. But if you go down a little further.
A little further.
Emily Dexter did finally come around and pulled papers. And then David Weinstein, who has run before. So he's
down. And so is Alechi. Or did he run for city council?
No, he ran for school committee. Yeah. So. Returning candidates, you know, who've done it in the past, you know, again, with the caveat that just because you pull papers doesn't mean you turn them in, right? But most of them will. And actually, if you go to the candidate pages,
there's no room here with this stupid mouse. I have to close this one, right?
That's fine. Yeah. Yeah.
Candidate pages.
Yeah. If you go to the candidate pages here. So this is sort of just a different way of portraying things alphabetically, you know, maybe a bit better. So Sukiya Akiba has actually turned in signatures, actually is qualified for the ballot.
Where is that person?
Very first in the list.
We don't have a picture.
Is that a male or female? Female.
Okay.
Right? You know, so this is the list so far. Mm-hmm. You know, so
30 candidates. That's crazy. 30
candidates.
9 seats.
Right, for 9 seats. Now, bear in mind, 30 candidates includes John Pitkin, should he follow through on the rumored candidacy.
True.
But one thing that is not in the papers being pulled here, right now, if you step right there.
Yeah.
If you see in the M's, after Councillor Mallon, McGovern, mm-hmm. Jeff McNary, now it's Riza Mednick. Now, Riza Mednick has not pulled papers, but on Monday, did file with the State Office of Campaign and Political Finance.
Do you know who that is? Yeah, she was in your neighborhood, right?
Yep, she's on Maple Avenue. She actually was one of our fellow member on the Envision Cambridge Advisory Committee.
Oh.
Very active in some nonprofits.
So long-term Cambridge person?
Yep, very active, civically involved, very much sort of a...
Profession?
Interested in climate change issues. So I imagine...
If she doesn't follow through with this, she will
be part of a group of candidates, all of whom are
running
as a group of candidates. I don't know if they will be as a slate or anything like that, but there's clearly a strong representation of candidates who are, you know, for whom like Quentin Zondervan are kind of climate change centered candidates.
All right.
Right.
Can you talk about something you have on your webpage about Cambridge Civic? What is this new association?
So it's called the Cambridge Civic Coalition. Actually, that's something I hadn't written down too much, but I think it's worth mentioning.
Yeah, we don't have a link. It's just you mentioned a new civic or
they
Cambridge
have a Facebook,
Citizens Coalition.
They have a Facebook page as well. So
how did you find out about it?
They contact me. In fact, the interesting thing about it is that there was a piece I wrote about 10 years ago on a Cambridge Civic Journal that was specific to the founding of the Cambridge Civic Association in 1945, basically their mission statement. And I said, you know, this is actually a pretty good mission statement. It would be perfectly great today. Well, they took that mission statement. They gave me credit.
Good.
And they said, they basically said, so this is pretty good principles to which to follow. Well, I mean, Suzanne Guillet, some of the people who were there, were calling themselves a group called Livable Cambridge.
Okay, so it's kind of the affordable housing overlay
that's
group that's
related
come out
to that.
To a lot of,
I think there's sort of the livability issues. You know, if you go back 20 years, there were groups like, or more than 20 years, really, 25 or more years, there was a group called the Cambridge Citizens for Livable Neighborhoods.
But isn't that livable? Did that morph into livable?
No. No, they technically still exist. Okay. I believe that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, CLN.
CCLN.
Or CC, yeah.
Okay. If I'm not mistaken, I believe the Association of Cambridge Neighborhoods is actually officially listed as CCLN doing business as Association of Cambridge Neighborhoods. So it exists. Now, that doesn't mean the same people are involved or whatever, but, you know, it continues. Hmm. The another thing is that, again, some people object when I make this assertion, but the bulk of the people who were affiliated with CCLN also were at the heart of a group back in the late 90s called the Cambridge Residents for Growth Management, CRGM.
How long did that one last?
It existed for a while. I, you know, it was back when they were doing a lot of citywide downzonings. And very much in the same spirit as the principles that the CCLN supported. And many of the same people. And so that was kind of all the rage at the time.
When was that?
Late 90s.
So when did Alewife happen? How did that happen?
So what happened, was that after the demise of rent control, which was 1994 election and implemented come 95 and for two years following, the general policy within the city council was to promote housing growth. That was in the subsequent years, that's when inclusionary zoning came about. Around 1998, I believe. And also there were, they changed zoning in pretty much to allow housing in all zoning districts.
So that's what happened. That's how Alewife happened?
Well, they allowed housing growth in all districts, but the thing is there was still the old zoning in place in terms of allowable densities, et cetera, in places like Alewife. So back in the early aughts, maybe it was about 2004 or 5, I could be a little wrong on this, the city did produce what they call the Concord Alewife Plan. And in it, they had zoning recommendations that were implemented that encouraged housing growth to happen in the Alewife quadrangle.
So it just happened and people now are complaining about it?
I mean, well, it's interesting because...
I get asked about it all the time from people that don't follow stuff. How did that happen?
Happened was is that the economic... You know, the Concord Alewife happened before there was sort of economic boom times.
Right. What was there before?
Industrial wasteland, really, and some office buildings and things like that.
The subway that Alewife set was there.
Yeah,
but
so this
is
west of the station,
right? Yeah.
You know, you can either be north of the tracks, which is the triangle, or south of the tracks, the quadrangle, heading down toward Fresh Pond.
Right.
So the Concord Alewife plan laid out a vision for what should happen in there, and then there was an anticipation that over the next 10, 15 years, housing would grow and things would happen. Well, the housing took off like a rocket, and
it's like 20-story buildings, right?
Yeah. So the thing is that the recommendations to actually promote housing growth around there happened much faster than people had originally
anticipated. So they really didn't have time to object in some ways.
So people started objecting because basically, you know, I wouldn't call it the best planning to have that many housing units in what's
effectively... There's only one way in, one way out.
It's like a cul-de-sac.
It's crazy. Yeah. There's no bridge, which was recommended.
No bridge, exactly.
Crazy.
So maybe it wasn't the best thought-out plans.
Right.
But promoting housing growth was considered sort of a good thing. It's transit-oriented development. It's reasonably close to
LA. Definitely was the first...
Right,
but none of them are none of them covered inclusion, right?
No, it's all built after inclusionary.
So it's all rentals. There's no condos either. I think it's all rentals.
I think it's primarily rental because that's where the money was.
Right, it's all rentals.
Those years,
right?
Back in the 90s, it was all condos were all the rage, but then rental housing became the bigger rage.
And now it's sort of God knows what it is.
Yeah, but the thing is that there's pretty high turnover out there, so it's not really what we would in any reasonable way think of as a stable neighborhood.
No, there's not.
But if you're showing up into Cambridge because you're getting a job in Kendall, you might pick up a place to live there for a while, whatever. So maybe it'll grow into something.
Or if
more
you're
stable.
Working out on 128, it's another.
It's very much.
It's close to.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If you can ever get out of there in the car.
Well, although going out on Route 2 is probably easier than coming in.
Probably. Yeah. But anyway, it took off, and quite honestly, if you go back to about 2013, Cambridge City Council elections. The big hue and cry at the time was there's no master plan, you know, this is everything's just crazy. But it was really driven by people being upset by the fact that it was a traffic nightmare on Alewife Brook Parkway.
And it still is, and it will be because you can't prevent people coming from
And if you wanted to just go pick up groceries over at Whole Foods or something, it was going to be hard. So, so there was a need for that, sure. So they called for a master plan, which eventually morphed into Envision Cambridge.
Wasn't there some master plan, though? Or did they just drop it in the favor of Envision?
It's been one of the great lies, is the notion that Cambridge never had a master plan. Of course it did. It's always had master plan, but it exists in pieces, like neighborhood studies, planning documents, Actually, Cambridge has got more of that.
Someone should have just looked at all that, taken the best out of it, and saved millions of dollars.
Actually, in Envision Cambridge, that is a part of what was done. They did. They definitely took pieces of prior studies and used
it. And they cited those studies and all that? Okay.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely true.
Well, I guess someone had to do it.
You know, but... But yeah, I think a lot of the people who started off, you know, kicked off the whole process kind of complaining about traffic and the rapid growth of housing around Alewife, which some people think is a great thing and some people think is not such a great thing.
I don't know anyone who thinks it's a great thing.
Well, I mean, just housing units, just building up a stock of housing, you know, does provide units.
It's not community. It's not community. It's not families. Where are they going to go to school?
But if you didn't have that, then everybody would be putting even more pressure on the previous housing stock. So it's sort of a relief valve, something I know a thing or two about or other matters.
Well, we'll get into that
in a second. Yeah. But anyway, they, you know, arguably Envision Cambridge was really spurred just by, you know, the outrage about that.
Yeah.
One of the kind of curiosities about the outgrowth of Envision Cambridge is that it really doesn't, though it has the Alewife section on it, it hasn't really been a whole lot of movement on it. So
you mean the whole thing itself?
Yeah, on Alewife. And I don't know that, in fact, there's any real clear vision. The city council certainly hasn't brought up the question about how much of that Envision Alewife stuff is worth being
implemented. What about the quadrangle? Is that in the Envision thing?
Much of the quadrangle was already pretty much under development. So I would say the real key thing yet to come is what happens in the Alewife. I said triangle was fully developed. Pardon me.
The quadrangle,
which is south of the railroad tracks, that is...
Which is light industrial, which we want to keep light industrial.
That's
right.
But the thing is, nobody's changed any zoning
to
permit it.
And meanwhile, Cabot and
Fords and others are buying properties up there, and they have big plans. Now, so it wouldn't be a bad idea to have the city... Now, they're not ignorant of what the city's intentions long-term are.
Right.
So if they're buying up properties, they're doing so with their eyes wide open, knowing that there is a plan to enact zoning to shape things in a particular way.
And also, isn't there a plan to ask those companies to help pay for a bridge?
That is part of the hope.
If that doesn't happen, that's crazy.
I think that's right. But
you gotta have other access points into that.
But, you know, I mean, many people are going to rail against the evil capitalists who are buying the properties, but ultimately it's the people with the deep pockets.
You better just get friendly with them.
Unless the city wants to fund the building of a bridge themselves, which they're not going to do.
No. What would it be?
Then basically their best hope is to have somebody with deep pockets do something interesting up there, hopefully something everybody can live with and be happy about, and then have them actually, you know, take concrete steps toward making an actual crossing or more of the railroad tracks to sort of make that a more unified area.
Even if it's just for whatever, they need some access.
Need some access. So, you know, those who think that just having bicycles and pedestrians is somehow adequate really are kind of missing the point.
At least for buses, too, or something.
Yeah, some kind of shuttle buses.
If
people work in there to get them to and from the Alewife T stations.
That would be great.
Yeah. Because
Everyone wants to get on a scooter.
Right. And you can say, it's within a quarter mile of the Alewife T station, but if you have to walk it and there's no direct connection, it takes a long while.
That, because if you had the bridge, it would be faster.
Much faster if you had a bridge.
That has got to be on the somewhere.
Oh yeah. So is this going to be a topic for all the candidates this year? I'm not so sure because there's so much focus on this overlay business.
If anyone's listening, it's a good point because it is almost the last frontier
in many respects.
You know?
It's true. So I hope
it's done right.
I hope some attention to the Alewife Quadrangle doesn't get lost in all the controversy over East Cambridge Courthouse or overlay or this or that. You know, there are other things, or bike infrastructure, right? You know, that we have a tendency in Cambridge these days, really just like national, you know, there's a whole country with all sorts of things, yet it seems if you tune into the news, it's all about immigration and the border.
Yeah.
I kind of think there are a few other issues in the country.
Although it does seem to predominate since we are a land of immigrants, so we won't.
I know it. But the thing is that it's sort of like how magicians do their magic is basically they draw your attention to one thing.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, they're doing the magic elsewhere.
Yeah, meanwhile, he's taking.
But they were all doing it. Honestly,
I know.
The entire political rhetoric at the national level is all distraction. And the thing is that if everybody just focuses on like one or two things in Cambridge and then that, and we elect an entire city council purely on one or two very narrow issues, you might have a little buyer's remorse come 2020. Mm. You know, so think about the whole candidate, the whole issue, or the whole range of issues.
Right. It's housing, and it's climate change.
And think about your own issues too. Yeah. Not just the ones that people tell you are the issues. Quite honestly, what happens at the East Cambridge Courthouse, which we should talk about.
I would like to talk about that. It seems like there's this last ditch effort.
Yeah, but that's not a defining issue for the whole city.
No.
So if you live
elsewhere
in the city, it's really a relatively minor point. So anyway, it is getting exciting, and if you're a candidate, you better get those papers in pretty soon and make sure you fill out those fields, because I'm watching, and so is a lot of other people.
Yeah, you're watching.
Anyway, so we'll
see you
in
the next segment
on Cambridge Inside Out.